Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 30th, 2020. Section A, Education. Judge dismisses Save Lee Rebels lawsuit against MISD by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. A district court judge dismissed the second Lee High School-related lawsuit brought against Midland ISD last fall. Judge Tryon Lewis, sitting by assignment in the District 238th Court, dismissed the lawsuit filed by Kerry McNeil and the nonprofit organization Save Lee Rebels. The original copy of the lawsuit, filed on October 29th, showed a petition calling for the removal of James Fuller of District 1, Rick Davis of District 6, Robert Marquez of District 2, John Trashitti of District 5, and John Kennedy of District 4. The petition was amended to include Davis, Marquez, and Trashitti. Kennedy opted not to run for re-election, and Fuller lost a runoff for the District 1 seat. The lawsuit stated that according to subchapter of Chapter 87 of the Texas Local Government Code, a district judge may remove from office a member of the Board of Trustees of an independent school district, and that Local Government Code 87.013 states a school board trustee may be removed for incompetency, which is defined as gross ignorance of official duties, gross carelessness in the discharge of those duties, or unfitness or inability to promptly and properly discharge official duties because of a serious physical or mental defect that did not exist at the time of the officer's election. In the order denying the request for citation and dismissing action, Lewis wrote, having considered the statutory authority and the pleading of court record, the court finds the petitioner's request for citation is not well taken and should be denied. The cause of action was dismissed with costs of court assessed against the petitioners. In November, a lawsuit brought forth by Jeremy Shane Mansell against Midland ISD was dismissed. Mansell was seeking a temporary restraining order and temporary and permanent injunction against Midland ISD as the district attempted to rename Robert E. Lee High School and Freshman School. Construction to begin in March on Trail Park. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Midland will be getting a new biking and hiking trail as the City Council approved the multi-use trail park, where the Permian Basin Bicycle Association will build with help from the West Texas Trail Alliance. Construction for the park should start around March 1st, the Permian Basin Bicycle Association Mountain Bike Director Stephen Mitchell said. The park will be located on land beside and behind the Midland Fire Department Fire Training Facility, Harris Field, at 3215 Farm to Market 307. It's a really good accomplishment between the city and a private club, Mitchell said. We are excited to start building trails out there to create an excellent park for the community. The land is available because 60% of it is 100-year floodplain, so other developments couldn't be put in. The Midland downtown skyline is visible from the area, and Scarber Draw runs through the land as well. The initial trail will be roughed out and rideable within 2 to 3 months of starting construction, so we're trying for June 1st. We'll continue for a year or two to build features. We will build earthen berms and some land bridges across some low-lying areas. Midlands Park will be 135 acres with a pond area that is already established. PBPA wants to install 7 miles of bike trails and also have a wider perimeter trail for walking. There also are plans for a disc golf course, which they will be laying out while mapping out trails. City Council members Jack Ladd and Lori Belong reached out to the PBPA back in June or July of 2020, Mitchell said. We went out and walked the park, recognized the potential, and started working toward making it happen. Depending on how much money is raised, the group plans to build a beginner track and a track for children near a pavilion. PBBA wants to make the park as family-oriented as possible. However, people should know to bring their own water, sunscreen, and that wildlife will still be present in the area. We will build the beginner and children's tracks near the pavilion where the younger kids can practice their skills. Parents can watch their kids and sit in the pavilion shade. We will also probably build a pump track, which is a big circular track with some berms and rollers. We will also build a few drops and jumps. The Odessa Mountain Bike Park has been leased from Odessa since 2011, and 90% of the trail is built. Phase 1 of Big Spring Mountain Bike Trail was completed in 2018. The group will hire professional trail builder Jared Quirk, who worked on the Big Spring Mountain Bike Trail. The land doesn't have as many natural features as the Odessa Trail, but Midland said they will use the natural inclines and mounds to make sure the trail isn't flat. The differences between the Midland and Odessa parks are summed up to the differences of the topography, he said. The Midland area will be different because it is a heavily forested area for 40% of the park. The terrain itself looks different from Big Spring and Odessa. The project will be privately funded through donations and memberships. Access to the park will require joining the PBBA. The annual fee is $30 per individual or $35 per family. Members will also have access to the Odessa Mountain Bike Park, and the Big Spring State Park Mountain Bike Trail is free. The goal is to raise $150,000. So far, the West Texas Trail Alliance has committed $25,000 to the project. Vaccines approach 1,000 a day. Impact on hospitals continues to decrease. From staff reports. Midland Health reported that an average of 1,004 people received the COVID vaccine on Monday through Friday during the first week of mass vaccination operations at the Horseshoe Complex. Midland Health showed the number of vaccines topped 1,000 on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The percentage of people who tested positive for COVID-19 through Thursday of this week at Midland Health testing centers is 12%, the lowest percentage going back to the week of September 26th. COVID's impact on Memorial Hospital includes a combined 38 active cases on the critical care unit and on the COVID floor, one of the lower totals in recent memory. COVID patients made up 17% of the hospital's inpatient occupancy Friday morning, the lowest percentage in months. The percentage of COVID patients in hospitals across the Midland-Odessa region of the state fell from 9.6% last week to 8.9% this week. That percentage was 15.9% in January. Average one-bedroom apartment rent falls below $700, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Apartment prices in Midland continued their drop year over year in January, according to ApartmentList.com. The online apartment guide reported that it does appear rents are bottoming out as the month-over-month drop was 0.1% compared to December. However, Apartment List showed Midland with the second highest year-over-year drop in the nation, trailing only Odessa. Odessa and Midland led even larger cities of San Francisco, New York, and Seattle. It is the second straight January that Midland rents dropped year-over-year. The drop in rent in Midland has turned Midland from the city with the highest average rent in the state to one of the lowest. In January, Midland ranked third among larger West Texas cities. Rents for one-bedroom apartments included $491 in Odessa and $820 in Abilene. Rents for two-bedroom apartments were $672 in Odessa and $838 in Midland. Apartment List reported 1% growth in average rents nationally in January and 1% growth month over month. Midland ranks as second most affordable in the U.S. by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. When the average price of a house is $346,834, it is hard to think a place might be called affordable, but that is the case according to Ascent, a service of the Motley Fool. The personal finance website ranked Midland number 2 in the nation in its list of the 10 most affordable places to live in the U.S. The website uses two metrics, cost of living and median household income, to determine the estimated income to expense ratio. In Midland, that ratio, based on a cost of living estimate of $60,894 and the median household income of $82,650, was 1.36%, which trailed only the Texas city of Cedar Park. Rounding out the top five were Ogden, Utah, Raleigh, North Carolina, and Provo, Utah. The third Texas city in the top 10 was Austin. The Ascent stated in its report that it analyzed cost-of-living data from the Council of Community and Economic Research's Cost-of-Living Index, the most recent report available at the time of this writing. The index measures the cost of groceries, housing, utilities, transportation, health care, and miscellaneous goods and services. We combined this information with expenditure data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and income figures from the U.S. Census Bureau for over 200 cities to create this ranking. Among the cities in the top 10, Midland had the fourth lowest cost of living estimate and the third highest median household income. The cost of living index in Midland is only 3.4% below the national average, but the median income is 20.3% higher than the national median. Unfortunately, the unemployment rate in Midland is quite high compared to the national rate and the highest on our list. Compared with other cities in the U.S., there are twice as many people in Midland working in construction and extraction occupations. There's also a high number of people working in engineering and architecture occupations and in installation, maintenance, and repair positions. Martin County passes Midland in terms of total rigs. Pioneer Natural Resources now has 19 rigs in the Permian. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Drilling activity remains on an upward, if flat, relatively flat, trend. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics company Enverus reported Friday the U.S. rig count rose 6 to 384, though down 406 rigs from the 790 reported a year ago. There were 295 rigs looking for oil, up 6, but down 380 from the 675 drilling for oil this time last year. There were 88 rigs drilling for natural gas, unchanged from the previous week. Texas gained 7 rigs to 182, though there were 213 fewer rigs than the 395 reported a year earlier. North Dakota, Oklahoma, and Wyoming also reported higher rig counts for the week. New Mexico lost 3 rigs to 62 and was joined by Alaska as a producing state to see a slight decline in drilling activity. The Permian Basin rose 4 rigs to 192. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active in the Permian with 34 rigs, down 1 for the week. Martin County added 2 rigs for 21 at work within county lines, while Loving County reported 9 rigs, unchanged for the week. Midland County dropped 1 rig to 18, and Reeves County saw 2 new rigs go to work for 15 this week. Wink and Yoakum counties saw renewed activity for the week, adding 1 rig each. According to Enverus Rig Analytics, the U.S. count is up 9% for the last month. Enverus reports the Gulf Coast Basin drove last week's overall increase, adding 4 active rigs. 2 of those new rigs are working for EOG Resources, 1 each in Karnes and Gonzales County. EOG now has 7 rigs running in the basin, its largest program since last April. EOG is the most active company in the region, followed by ConocoPhillips with 4, BP with 3, and Marathon Oil with 3. Month over month, the increase has been the largest in the Permian, with 14 added. Appalachia is also up on the month, with 5 additional rigs, putting the region's total at 40. Southwestern has added 2 rigs since the start of the year, with 5 running currently. After running one rig during fourth quarter, Antero Resources increased its count by one. Range Resources also added a rig in early 2021 and is now running three. Diamondback CEO, "This is an oversupplied world," by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Oil prices were little moved this week as small moves upward were negated by similar moves downward as oil demand recovery remains uncertain. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Stock Exchange dipped 14 cents Friday to close at $52.20 a barrel. The posted price ended the week at $46.68. Natural gas prices on the New York MEX could not overcome Monday's 16-cent drop, despite climbing 11 cents the next 2 days. Prices ended the week at 2.564 cents per MCF. "We are still 8 million barrels of oil oversupplied," Travis Stice, chief executive officer of Diamondback Energy, told the Reporter-Telegram after participating in a roundtable discussion on oil and gas issues with Governor Greg Abbott. Though Saudi Arabia acted unilaterally to remove the additional 1 million barrels from the market, it's incumbent on oil producers to be aware this is an oversupplied world and we don't need to grow volumes. Producers should be cognizant that members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries have made clear they are seeking to take market share from U.S. shales. Clint Walker, general manager of Cut Energy Services, which hosted the roundtable discussion, said his company is taking a cautious approach to the improvement in oil prices. "It's been a really tough year, and our objective is to get our equipment out there and generate returns for our investors," he said. Bloomberg reported that Friday's decline capped a third straight week with New York futures stuck near $52 a barrel. U.S. equities weakened amid lingering concerns over volatile retail trading, while Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough allayed some worries about the deterioration of consumption. It's clear the demand environment remains tepid. Chevron posted a fourth-quarter loss after weak fuel consumption hit its refining business. "There's a lot of issues out there when it comes to demand going forward. A massive amount of the population is not going out anywhere. Demand will definitely see a big snapback, but who knows when that's going to be." While headline prices have been treading water, the futures curve is pointing to a more balanced market as OPEC Plus output curbs and restrained U.S. shale production help further draw down inventories accumulated during the pandemic. According to Bloomberg, the nearest contracts for both Brent and West Texas Intermediate have moved further into a premium relative to the next month, a pattern known as backwardation that signals tighter supplies and strong demand. At the same time, low processing rates from refiners are keeping fuel supplies more or less in check. The incentive for processing a barrel of oil is growing, with the combined refining margin of gasoline and diesel back near levels last seen in May. Still, the outlook for a consumption recovery remains shaky. The virus variant is identified in South Africa has reached the U.S. just as Europe is set to tighten its rules on the export of vaccines.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram published Saturday, January 30th, 2021. At the top of the front page, energy. Chevron says Permian growth depends on pandemic and OPEC Plus, by Kevin Crowley and Alex Steele, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation will wait until it has a firmer read on the trajectory of the COVID-19 pandemic and OPEC Plus before resuming its ambitious plan to grow shale oil production in the Permian Basin. The California oil titan has made its unique Permian position the cornerstone of future growth plans, with aspirations to more than double production to 1 million barrels a day by the mid-2020s. But crashing oil prices last year forced Chevron, like its rivals, including ExxonMobil Corporation, to halt these plans. We had paused in the Permian because the world doesn't need more barrels, and we didn't want to spend more capital to add barrels in an oversupplied market, Chief Financial Officer Pierre Breber said in an interview on Friday with Bloomberg TV. But the resource is there, and the opportunity is there when the conditions are right. With commodity prices rallying since the first vaccines were approved in early November, speculation is rife as to whether U.S. shale will resume fast-paced production growth and thwart OPEC's carefully balanced plans to stabilize crude prices. Chevron, one of the Permian's top two producers, appears to be sticking to the script. We need to get control over the pandemic and be on a pathway to a sustained economic recovery, Breber said. We need to see inventory levels get back to a more normal range, and then we want to have an idea about what OPEC Plus is going to do. They obviously have a lot of barrels curtailed right now. It could take until the second half of the year or even early 2022 before conditions are right for Chevron to increase investment in the new drilling in America's biggest oil field, Breber said. Chevron has set its capital budget at just $14 billion this year, which, along with 2020, is the lowest in a decade and 65% below its peak in 2014. The company has also slashed operating expenses, jobs, and sold assets to help deal with the effects of the pandemic, which pushed oil prices to the lowest in a generation last year. With those changes, Breber says Chevron can now fund its dividend and capital spending with Brent crude at less than $50 a barrel. Last year, the company was forced to borrow heavily with its net debt to equity ratio rising 22.7% from 13% at the end of 2019. Crime of the Week. The Midland County Sheriff's Office and Midland Crime Stoppers need your help in solving a burglary of a business. On January 6th, deputies responded to the 4200 block of South County Road 1223 in reference to a theft. Upon arrival, contact was made with the victim, who advised that an unknown suspect or suspects gained access into the Dawson Geophysical Yard and stole a 2020 Kawasaki Mule, a Big Texas single-axe utility trailer, an MITM air compressor and welder, and a 22 exhaust catalyst, all valued at over $122,261. If you have any information on this case that leads to an arrest of the suspect or suspects involved, you'll be eligible for a $1,000 cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS. No caller ID is ever used, and you will remain anonymous. Or use the Crime Stoppers app, P3TIPS. Crime Stoppers fugitive, Jeremiah Fowler. Age 44, height 5'8", weight 215 pounds. Wanted for failure to comply, sex offender. Wanted as of January 28th. $500 cash reward to the first person who calls Midland Crime Stoppers this week with information that leads to this fugitive's arrest. Call 694-TIPS or 1-800-7-LOCKUP. Online at MidlandCrimeStoppers.com, mobile app P3TIPS. As always, you will remain anonymous. Never attempt to apprehend this subject yourself. Subject may be armed and dangerous. Report says Odessa ranks among car theft capitals of U.S. by Stuart Doreen. Odessa is ranked among the car theft capitals of the United States, according to the insurance website Insurify.com. Odessa ranked fifth in the nation for cities with the highest rate of motor vehicle theft per capita. Insurify reported a rate of 569 car thefts per 100,000 residents, a figure that is up from 447 in 2019. Odessa is one of two Texas cities to crack the top 20. Lubbock is the other at number 15. The average car theft rate across all cities in the United States is 207.18 vehicles stolen per 100,000 residents, according to Insurify. Odessa's rate was 2.75 times the national average. California was home to half the cities inside the top 20, including top-ranked Bakersfield, 726.28 car thefts per 100,000 residents. Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the St. Joseph, Missouri, Kansas metropolitan statistical area rounded out the top three. Cities with the most car theft, 2021 rankings, city theft per 100,000 people. Bakersfield, California, 726.28. Albuquerque, New Mexico, 697.05. St. Joseph, Missouri, Kansas, 614.9. Modesto, California, 573.013. Odessa, 569.11. Also, Lubbock, number 15, 485.64. U.S. driller that produces 70 barrels a day soared following Reddit craze, by Michael Tobin, Bloomberg. An obscure company that employs five people and appears to produce negligible amounts of oil and gas from some wells in Appalachia slumped Friday, one day after soaring almost 1,000% in the latest Reddit-fueled day trading craze. New Concept Energy Incorporated dropped as much as 54%, triggering circuit breakers. The Dallas-based company was the focus of a trading frenzy Thursday after mentions by retail traders on the Wall Street Bets forum on Reddit, just as brokerages including Robinhood Markets clamped down on trading in some other shares, such as GameStop Corporation, after some of the wildest stock swings the markets have seen in recent years. The resultant 959% rally thrust into the spotlight a company that had previously attracted minimal attention. Filings show New Concept Energy produces a mere 70 barrels of oil equivalent a day and has a board whose average age is 74. Gene S. Bircher, who serves as the chairman, principal executive officer, president, and chief financial officer, earned $56,500 in 2019. The company didn't respond to requests for a comment. New Concept Energy is the successor by merger of Westpac Investor Trust, and the company was incorporated in 1991 as Medical Resource Companies of America. At the end of 2019, it had 153 producing gas wells and 44 non-producing wells, with mineral leases across 20,000 acres, according to filings. The company lost 46 cents a share on revenue of $590,000 in 2019, according to its annual report. Shares of New Concept Energy were down 53% to $11.84 as of 11:08 a.m. in New York, giving it a market value of about $62 million. Short interest in New Concept Energy has fallen to 0.3% of its float, from 13% earlier this month, according to data from S3 Partners. Marathon Oil shrinks CEO pay 25% while cutting emissions, by David Weth, Bloomberg. Marathon Oil Corporation took a rare step among independent shale explorers by cutting executive compensation and boosting anti-pollution targets. Such measures have become increasingly common among the top tier of major oil companies as management teams seek to allay investors concerned about environmental impacts, social issues, and corporate governance. The Houston-based oil driller will slash Chief Executive Officer Lee Tillman's total compensation by 25% and cut greenhouse gas emissions on a unit of production basis in half by 2025. The company said Wednesday in a statement. Kimmeridge Energy Management Company, an activist investor pushing other shale companies to make similar steps, applauded the moves a day later. "We believe strong corporate governance is foundational to delivering ultimate shareholder value and have modified our executive compensation framework to further align management interests with stakeholders and to incentivize the behaviors we believe are most important," Tillman said in the statement. The compensation changes, which also apply to the board of directors, include the elimination of oil production metrics in calculating annual bonuses, Marathon said. Tillman's 219 total compensation climbed 15% from a year earlier to $14.1 million, according to a federal filing. Chesapeake Energy Corporation announced its own set of emissions reduction targets on Wednesday. A pioneer of the shale patch that's now working its way through bankruptcy, Chesapeake is targeting net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2035 and plans to halt routine flaring of excess natural gas on all new wells this year. Exxon and Chevron hold steady on dividends, by Paul Takashi, Houston Chronicle. Exxon and Chevron, the largest U.S. oil majors, maintain their shareholder dividends for the first quarter, a sign that there is still some uncertainty about oil's recovery. Exxon on Thursday said it will pay out a dividend of 87 cents per share, which it has kept steady since mid-2019. Chevron on Thursday said it will pay out a dividend of $1.29 per share, flat since the start of the pandemic last year. Dividends provide a window into future prospects for companies. Oil and gas companies are doing all they can to preserve their dividends to woo Wall Street investors back to the energy sector in the face of the worst oil downturn in decades. Companies have cut capital spending and laid off thousands of workers while preserving dividends. If oil companies stray from their shareholder commitments, it could spell more losses for their stock values, which have been pummeled after crude prices and demand plunged during the global coronavirus pandemic. Energy last year became the worst performing sector in the U.S. stock market, following years of middling performance. Exxon, which has reliably grown its dividend for more than three decades, counts about 70% of its shareholders as retail investors that have come to expect the company's regular payouts.
Obituaries and death notices. Aiden Ataide passed away unexpectedly on January 27th in Midland at the age of 41. Viewing will be Monday, February 1st from 1 to 9 p.m. and Tuesday, February 2nd from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Services will be Wednesday, February 3rd at the funeral home at 10 a.m. All are welcome to celebrate Adrian Aiden's life. Alice Rita Schlegel, age 91, left this world on January 24th to join her departed husband of 70 years. Funeral services will be on Saturday, January 30th at 12:30 p.m. at Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. A private family burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. Charlene Davis Mobley passed from this life into the arms of Jesus, her Savior, on the evening of January 28th. No immediate services are planned. A memorial service will be held in the spring when the bluebonnets are in bloom. Charles Augustus Davis passed away January 26th in Lakeway. He will be laid to rest in Wimberley, Texas. In honor of Chuck, the family requests donations to Baylor Scott & White ICU Department, Lakeway, Texas. Chick Wheeler passed away peacefully at home in Fort Worth on January 23rd. The family will hold a private memorial service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the West Texas Boys Ranch or the charity of your choice. Luis Carrasco Lopez, 85, of Midland, passed away on January 24th with his family by his side. Viewing times will be Saturday, January 30th from 5 to 9 p.m. and Sunday, January 31st from 1 to 9 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A rosary will be held on Sunday, January 31st at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be celebrated on Monday, February 1st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine in Midland. Burial will follow at West Rest Haven Memorial Park. Melba Loreen Sykes passed away Saturday, January 23rd. A celebration of her life will be on Wednesday, February 3rd at 1 p.m. in the Sanctuary of Grace Christian Fellowship. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be designated to Youth Ministry / Grace Christian Fellowship, Odessa, Texas. Burial will follow with a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Nestora Luna, 89, of Ozona, passed away on January 27th. A visitation will be held at 6 p.m. Monday, February 1st, with a rosary starting at 7 at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. The Mass is at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, February 2nd at St. Anne's. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Ronald Edward Self, 71, went to be with his Lord and Savior on Monday, January 25th. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at sunsetodessa.com. Hugo Vasquez of Midland passed away January 25th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, February 3rd at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be Thursday, February 4th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Juan Jose Esquivel, 62 of Midland, passed away Tuesday, January 6th. Viewing will be Tuesday, February 2nd from 9 to 9 p.m. and a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be Wednesday, February 3rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine.
Hello, this is Michael reading the first story from the Odessa American, published Saturday, January 30th, 2021. Dowling Pilots Communities in Schools by Ruth Campbell. Communities in Schools is best known around the Permian Basin for its dropout prevention program at the secondary level. Now it's trying a more interventional approach with younger children at Dowling Elementary School. Executive Director Elizio Elizondo said his nonprofit organization didn't get started at the elementary level until the middle of this year, but once the program is more established and fine-tuned, they will look at expanding it in the 21-22 school year. Elizondo said they would also like to expand into Midland ISD and are in discussions with both districts about that. Because many of the elementary campuses are failing in both districts, a decision was made to offer CIS as a way to help turn things around. Elizondo said the organization was set up to better start at ECISD. In choosing a school, Elizondo said communities in school looked at multiple factors such as numbers of economically disadvantaged and at-risk children and attendance figures. Another factor was the work of Principal Julie Marshall is doing at Dowling that Elizondo and Assistant Superintendent of Student and Support Services, Alicia Severson, thought would fit nicely. Marshall said her campus is thrilled to be the first elementary campus in the basin to partner with communities and schools. Our school CIS site coordinator is Courtney Selking. She is a former teacher and principal and brings a wealth of knowledge to this position. Courtney works inside the school coordinating and providing integrated student supports. She works with our school leadership, team, and staff to connect students and families with community resources that help to address both academic and non-academic needs, allowing students to show up healthy, safe, and prepared to learn, Marshall wrote in an email. It may seem odd to some people that an elementary school would need a program focused on dropout prevention. However, we know that school success starts in kindergarten. CIS provides supports that set students up for success, including clothing, supplies, food, tutoring, working on social-emotional skills, and parent involvement programs. Teachers can refer a student to CIS, and parents can contact the campus if there is a need that CIS can help with. Dowling is excited to offer these services to our families and students. We look forward to partnering with CIS for many years, Marshall added. At the secondary level, Elizondo said CIS's model is based on providing a caring adult who can talk to students about careers, mentor them, take them to career fairs and visits to college campuses, among other things, to make them aware that this is a chance for them if they buckle down and do the work. The primary level approach also includes those things, but there is probably a little more focus on small groups. Elizondo said he thinks they will be in a better position to help teachers managing an entire classroom of students who may be at risk and or economically disadvantaged. Another difference will be exposure to social-emotional learning and exposing students to the thought of higher education and alternate careers at an earlier age. There will be a lot of attention paid to teaching students coping skills, for example. Selking said the school she was principal at in Tulsa, Oklahoma, had communities in schools, and she was surprised it wasn't in elementary schools in the Permian Basin. The goal is to intervene with children when they're younger to try and close the gaps before they become larger. It's a great way to kind of catch kids who are in crisis and in need when they're really young, and sometimes some of that work makes a huge impact in maybe stopping any future issues as they get older, or helps close those gaps as they progress through their school life, Selking said. Given her background in education, Selking added that she will be able to help as many students as needed. When COVID-19 abates, she hopes to have a chance to do more with more children. Elizondo said people forget how much elementary students are dealing with, especially now. He added that they are absorbing the stress and crises that are going on around them. We think we're buffering them and sheltering them, but we're really not. They're often smarter than we think they are. They pick up on stuff and are more aware than we realize. The emphasis is going to be big on helping these kids with coping skills and recognizing feelings. We feel that we can help teachers and counselors at the elementary level with that, Elizondo said.
More county road work slated. Completion of West 42nd rehabilitation and Cottonwood Road widening set. By Bob Campbell. 2021 is a big year for the Ector County Public Works Department, with ambitious projects including completion of the West 42nd Street reconstruction and widening 8.2 miles of Cottonwood Road in Commissioner Greg Simmons Precinct 2 through Gardendale. Having struggled against the effects of the pandemic through most of 2020, Public Works Director Evans Kessie recently told county commissioners that his department had nonetheless marked a productive year using revenues from the new 1.25 cent sales tax. Kessie's 2021 plans entail spending $5.2 million to widen, upgrade, and improve drainage on 3.1 miles of West 42nd from FM 1936 to Moss Avenue, where a troublesome dip will be leveled, concrete culverts constructed, and water drainage pipes installed. In a $7.2 million job, Cottonwood will be widened and the pavement rehabilitated from US 385 to the Midland County line. Drainage will be improved and a grade channel built for $1.4 million on the tenth of a mile of Redondo Avenue from 16th to University. Other planned improvements and widenings this year include a mile of West 87th in Precinct 1 from 385 to North County Road West for $789,000, and 4 miles of Apple Street in Commissioner Armando Rodriguez Precinct 4 from Highway 385 to Jasper Avenue for $1.4 million. 65 miles of seal coating are scheduled, mostly in Precinct 4, for $1.4 million. We've done some road resurfacing in Ponderosa and Gardendale, Simmons said. The big project on the horizon is widening Cottonwood from 2 to 4 lanes with a turn, which will help with the oil field traffic. Highway 158 gets a lot of traffic, and it will alleviate some of the congestion in that area. Most of Kessie's work with his staff and contractors, Danny's Asphalt Paving, J&H Construction, and others, has been in Precinct 1, where Commissioner Mike Gardner said engineering was underway for Phase 2 of the West 42nd Street job. We're doing some diversion to keep water off the highway right before you get to Moss, Gardner said. We'll put in water lines instead of having to go underneath it. Last year, West 42nd was widened and upgraded over the 2.1 miles from Highway 302 to FM 1936 for $3.3 million. While bids were opened for reconstruction and drainage improvement on 4/10 of a mile of East 67th from 385 to Stevenson Avenue with a scheduled maximum cost of $998,000 there. County Highways and Streets employees seal-coated 43.5 miles of roads for $1.2 million. In Precinct 4, the staff performed full-depth reclamations with the stabilized stop bars and arrows at 48 intersections and repaired and maintained 815 regulatory and cautionary signs and posts. The goal is to provide road maintenance and perform seal coating on all 585 miles of roads in Ector County, but staff and other resources do not meet the standards for all precincts, Kessie said. He said 986 square yards of pavement were restored on Taxiway E at Schlemeyer Field for $49,000, while three new keypads were installed at the airport's new entrance for $41,000. A $1.4 million bid has been awarded to BC Electric to extend the airport's apron and install a medium approach lighting system. The installation of security cameras is planned at the north and south gates and beacon towers. Delivery is expected in April of a $266,938 grapple truck to be used by the Highways and Streets and Environmental Enforcement Departments to curb illegal dumping. A grapple truck has a loader mounted to its frame for loading bulky waste. Murray and officials explain the school calendar. How the school calendar is constructed and why things are timed the way they are was discussed in an Ector County ISD live broadcast. The live stream could be viewed on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube Thursday evening. Superintendent Scott Murray was joined by Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Lilia Nanez, Executive Director of Leadership, Corey Seymour, and Milam Elementary School fourth grade teacher Joy Mendoza. The school year next year will be 180 days, Murray said. We are in an academic crisis that has been magnified by the pandemic, so we have got to have academic time with our students because they are woefully behind their peers across the state of Texas, Murray said. That includes an option to add school days for pre-kindergarten through fifth grade students. Nanya said teacher contracts are 187 days, and that includes 7 days for professional development, planning, and records days. In his January 27th media call, Murray said the calendar was originally designed for those in education to meet the needs of an agrarian society. The children needed to be at home during the summer months to help mom and dad tend the fields and make sure the crops were harvested, Murray said. Today in 2021, our world looks different, and yet sometimes our calendar reflects our days from a century ago, and we have an opportunity using the school calendar to make sure that it is designed to most effectively meet the needs of our children. Nanya said there are several things that are considered when constructing the calendar, such as state requirements and local preferences. Feedback from teachers, staff, and the community was taken into account. The consensus calendar was choice C, which is on the ECISD website. The community expects a holiday between Labor Day and Thanksgiving. Students and teachers like a full week off at Thanksgiving and 2 weeks at Christmas. We're very happy to honor those expectations, Nanez said. Teachers also need records days at the end of the fall and spring semester to complete all their paperwork. ECISD is a district of innovation, Nanez said, which gives it flexibility on when it can start. She said, a subcommittee is created that begins work in early November. They use 3 calendar templates, and the committee helps the district decide on the start date and where to fit in requirements. The committee includes representatives from elementary and secondary schools, administration, and district personnel. Then it is on to the Continuous Improvement Committee that Nanez said is largely made up of teachers. She said what ECISD has seen during the pandemic and in summers before the pandemic is summer slide. Students regress over the summer, so when they start in later August, we would spend a lot of time getting kids caught up, she said. Mendoza said when students return to school after the summer, the teachers have to get them back into a routine and get them back to where they were when they left. With every good thing, because everybody loves summer vacation, comes the cost, and that is the cost. So this is going to help that summer slide not be so dramatic, Mendoza said. Murray said research shows the summer slide costs students 2.3 months of learning. So teachers are spending August, September, and October just catching students up from what they lost the prior year. For those who don't do much over the summer, Murray said, the loss is more significant. Mendoza said last year was detrimental, and she's hoping the extra learning days will let students and teachers fast forward. The calendar will be up for approval at the February school board meeting. First transcatheter aortic valve replacement performed at MMH. Midland. On January 25th, the first transcatheter aortic valve replacement, TAVR, procedure was performed at Midland Memorial Hospital. Dr. Mark Davis, interventional cardiologist, Dr. Kirit Patel, cardiovascular surgeon, and the cardiovascular team at MMH's Heart Institute successfully completed their first TAVR procedure on a patient with aortic valve stenosis using the Medtronic Evolut Pro transcatheter heart valve. Aortic stenosis is one of the most common heart valve diseases in adults. It is a narrowing of the valve between the heart and the rest of the body. This narrowing prevents the valve from opening fully, which makes the heart work harder to supply blood flow to the body. This may cause the heart to weaken, leading to chest pain, fatigue, and shortness of breath. Once these symptoms develop, intervention to fix the valve is required. While surgical aortic valve replacement, SAVR, has been the gold standard for decades, treatment of aortic stenosis has evolved over the past decade, with TAVR becoming a minimally invasive alternative for aortic valve replacement. It's a great option for older and more frail patients or who have heart damage that makes open heart surgery more challenging. Patients typically notice improved symptoms shortly after the TAVR and can be released as soon as the following day. At Midland Memorial Hospital, our multidisciplinary team is dedicated to serving our patients by providing the latest innovations and treatment options available to meet their cardiovascular needs. Through the coordination of an interventional cardiologist, cardiothoracic surgeons, imaging experts, anesthesiologists, nurses, special procedure technologists, and surgical technologists, each person's care is carefully planned to get the best health outcomes. Counselors Week, early release. Monday kicks off National School Counseling Week, and Ector County ISD's counselors will be honored with a drive-through breakfast starting at 7 a.m. that morning in the parking lot of the ECISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston. Tuesday is an early release day for all ECISD schools except the two early college high schools. The dismissal times for February 2nd are as follows. Noel, Travis, 11:30 a.m. All other elementary campuses, 11:40 a.m. Carver and Lamar, noon. Middle schools, 12:50 p.m. High schools, 1:40 p.m. A specific reminder goes out to parents of students who ride the bus. If an adult normally meets the bus to pick up their students, they will be required to meet their child on this day too, or the child will not be allowed to leave the bus. Pfluger visits OFR to recognize vaccination efforts. Congressman August Pfluger on Thursday paid a surprise visit to the city of Odessa to recognize the efforts of Odessa Fire Rescue's response to combating COVID-19. Pfluger said Friday he made the unscheduled visit to make sure fire rescue workers, law enforcement, and city staff realized their efforts in helping to vaccine 8,000 residents this past week was appreciated. It was a great opportunity to meet with the fire chief and city officials to discuss how the mass vaccine effort was conducted in Odessa, Pfluger said. I can't describe how incredible it was to see how smoothly the vaccination distribution went and to hear about the city's collaboration with the Medical Center Health System. I think those efforts can open the doors to future partnerships, and we'll be discussing that further with them. Odessa Fire Chief John Alvarez said Pfluger's visit was a morale booster for his team, who spent many hours helping to plan the effort and who helped provide shots at the event. I was very pleased to hear Congressman Pfluger praise our team, said Alvarez, who also helps to administer vaccines, who also helped to administer vaccines this past week. I'm extremely proud of our team and the way they stepped up. The mass vaccine effort at Ratliff Stadium is scheduled to resume Wednesday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Local news roundup. Kids Art Contest. The Take Care of Texas Kids Art Contest runs through March 5th. K through 5 students in Texas are invited to enter their artwork. 6 students and 1 lucky teacher will win a tablet or laptop. Prizes are made possible through a donation from the Texas Chemical Council. To sign up or for more details, visit takecareoftexas.org/kids/k-5-art-contest. Virtual fundraiser. The Power of One virtual luncheon and children's style show benefiting CASA of West Texas has been scheduled for 11:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. February 25th. This year's speaker is the True Hope dealer, Jeremy Bates. Sponsorships are available, or consider donating a silent auction item. CASA also has an Amazon wish list at tinyurl.com/y5jphm48. For information, call 432-683-1114, extension 19. Email Katie Sheehan at kSheehan@CASAWTX.org. or visit www.casawtx.org.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.